welcome to the River of Calms Beyond the Music podcast. I'm your host, Ed Basil, and the River of Calm is music to soothe your soul. And our Beyond the Music podcast gives you a closer look at the artists who are on the River of Calm. And today, we are so lucky to have in the studio pianist and composer Michelle McLaughlin. Michelle, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here speaking with you today.
Oh, and it's a pleasure to have you here. I know many of our listeners are going to want to know more about you and the girl behind all of this music. So let's start off. Tell me, how did you get started in music? What was your first memories of music?
I was little. I was, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years old, and we had a piano in our house, and I just loved to touch it and play it and make sounds. And then when I was in kindergarten, I used to come home from class, and all of the songs we would sing in our kindergarten class, I would play them by ear on the piano. And it was just my greatest joy to just be behind those keys playing and making music.
And it's so, magical. Yeah.
Yeah. I've always just been drawn. I don't know. It's just a connection I've always had.
Now, when you were young, did you, since you gravitated towards this, did you end up getting lessons, or were you self-taught, or how did that work?
My mom put me in lessons for a little while. I think I was in second grade, and I think I took maybe 2 lessons. So I don't really count it as taking lessons, because I didn't I didn't enjoy the experience, and I fought my mom on it, and I told her I didn't want to do that. And so I kind of learned, you know, I learned my initial like C major scale, but that's about it. And I can't read sheet music.
Yes. Yeah. Understandable. But see, look how successful you are. And this, you know, we had a podcast, a couple of different artists. One is a guy named Ted Yoder, who's a hammered dulcimer artist, really cool. He self-taught. He's won the national hammered dulcimer championships. And then there's Jim Chemo West. Jim's a guitar player. He's a slack key guitar player. He's also the guitar player for Weird Al Yankovic for decades.
Oh, wow.
But he is also self-taught. So, you know, if somebody thinks, oh, you have to go and take lessons, you are living proof that you don't. So you found this your own way.
Yeah, it's, looking back on it, I think that, you know, I would appreciate having known how to read sheet music, because I think that it would have, you know, widened my playing ability and my style ability. But but I kind of like being in my own little box and learning how to do things on my own, and you know, just sort of pulling the music from within, however it's going to come out, without those restrictions.
That's totally true. It takes away all the restrictions, and you've just developed being, the word is perfectly you, you know? Now, when you were growing up, what did you want to be when you were a young girl? Or did you have an idea, I'm going to be a musician, or was it something else?
I wanted to be a radiologist. I took a class in my high school years that it was like a vocational mentoring program where we went to all these different job sites and observed different people in different styles of jobs. And you know, we sort of had some hands-on ability with that experience. And I got to spend, I want to say it was 2 weeks in the radiology department at the Oregon State Health Sciences University.
Nice.
And I fell in love with that. And so my goal was to go into radiology school, but the wait list was very long, and that discouraged me. And I was not a great student. So I ended up going into project management instead.
Wow. No kidding. And so when you were doing that, was music still a part of your life, or was it in the background, dormant?
It's been a part of my life always, and I've always written. I started writing when I was 8, and I had, you know, a ton of songs that I would, you know, record just on a tape recorder. And it wasn't until the year 2000, my mom wanted me to make her a cassette tape so that she could listen to it in her car. And I thought, well, if I'm going to make this cassette tape for everybody, you know, for my mom, I'll make one for everybody. And I made like 30 copies of this super makeshift like cassette tape. And I gave that out for Christmas presents in the year 2000. And that's sort of what started this whole musical career. It wasn't anything that I had even, you know, planned on or dreamt of doing. But then, you know, here we are all these years later.
No kidding. Now, was that first musical tape, was that when you got your Yamaha Clavinova, or was that later?
It was the second one. So that first, the first tape was just a borrowed piano that I borrowed from my aunt. And then the response from that was so overwhelmingly positive and motivational that I ended up going down and bought the Yamaha Clavinova. And my second album, Elysium, is the one that I recorded on that piano that I bought.
Nice. The only reason I bring up the Clavinova, I just literally gave mine, donated it yesterday to a piano teacher. I had it for like 25 years. And so that's just an endearing keyboard, to say the least. So you record your second CD on, or your second recording was also cassette on with the Yamaha Clavinova?
Nope, it was an official CD. So I released just the first album on cassette, and then I re-released that album about 3 years later on CD as well.
Wow, no kidding. Now, were you, by the way, with these original songs, were you influenced by any artists at all, or was this purely your own?
Oh, I was a huge fan of George Winston. When I was eight, I had the chance to see him in concert, and I just loved watching him play and all the different things that he did with the piano when he'd pluck the strings, and just, it was pretty incredible. And so for a long time, I learned to play his music by ear, and that's sort of what taught me how to play, because I was, you know, emulating him. And then later on in my piano life, I really loved the music of Jim Brickman, and I was a huge fan of Paul Cardall. He's local here in Salt Lake. And those were kind of my early influences.
So that helped influence your music. You have a cassette out, you have a CD out. What's the next move in your life?
Well, from there, I decided that I was just going to do a CD every year as Christmas presents for friends and family. And so every Christmas, that's when I produced my albums. And then in, I want to say it was the year 2003, I read David Nevue's book on how to market your music online. And so I created a CD Baby website, and I put my music on iTunes, and all of a sudden people were buying my music and sending me messages about how much they loved it. And that's sort of what turned into, you know, now I'm going to start releasing music, not just for friends and family for Christmas, but this is going to be a project that I'm going to start releasing, you know, for fans. And that's kind of how it began.
How did that feel when you were getting that feedback that was coming in after being alone by yourself with your music?
It was exciting and overwhelmingly wonderful. Like, just, it kind of gave me a perspective of, you know, I write music for me. I do it because it's sort of my therapy. I like to just go to the piano and compose because it helps me, you know, release my emotions and my joy and my sorrow and all that. But then here are these people out in the world that are hearing it and sending me messages about how it's impacting their life. And that is such, like, just a beautiful thing to have something that you can share with other people that touches them in a way that really we have no way of comprehending. And so that's one of my motivations for continuing to release music and put it out there for people.
Nice. That's cool. Now, you started out with a cassette, then a CD. To this day, how many CDs have you released?
I just released my 19th CD this year, and I'm working on my 20th as we speak.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Congratulations. That is huge. Oh my gosh.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you've been at this since 2000, roughly around there.
2000 was the first release. And then, and then a yearly album pretty much from there. I went full time. So I quit my job as a project manager in 2007. When I was able to finally kind of just, help take care of my life through music income. And so I decided to take the leap in 2007 to really be a full-time musician. And that changed everything for me.
Oh, totally. Congratulations on that, to say the least. Wow.
Thank you.
So with all of this, you are prolific with the number of CDs you have out there. So tell me about your writing process. I'm always very curious on this. Does this stuff come so easy to Michelle, or does it come in the middle of the night, or do you sit down and mindfully work at this daily? How does it work for you?
It comes in as a it happens in the moment. So it's not something that I think about in advance, not usually at least. Most of the time I just go to the piano and I call it, you know, goofing off or noodling around, and I just improvise. And when something catches my ear is really special, then that's when I will develop it into, you know, a song. But most of the time it's just me at the piano releasing my emotions and, you know, my life out into the keys.
Nice. Well, that's very, I so appreciate that. Do you make time to do this daily or just when you feel like it, or how? I'm trying to get a schedule idea here.
I try to do it daily. My favorite time to play is in the morning. Like I get up, I have kind of a morning routine where I get up and get ready for the day, and then I'll eat some breakfast and maybe drink a cup of coffee. And then I go to the piano, and that's my favorite time to just sort of noodle around and spend time, you know, just lost in the music. Mm-hmm. And the other second time that I love to play is at night. Usually when it starts to get dark outside, a little bit after sunset, where, you know, the room is sort of in ambient lighting, and I just kind of sit at the keys and lose myself in the music then when it's quiet and sort of dark.
Nice. How cool is that? I'm the same way. In the morning after coffee, I have a specific time I sit down, and I'm working on scales and then lessons and then composing. So that's in the very morning. My best time is at night, like 11 at night when it's so dark out. And it's just me and the piano and my battery operated candles. So it works out.
That's perfect.
No kidding. So are you averaging a CD or two a year now, or how does that work?
Well, it varies. So this last project, for the last several years, actually, the albums have been roughly every, I would say, 18 to 24 months. Mm-hmm. And then this last album was a project of singles. So I decided that I was going to release, I was trying to do monthly, but that didn't work out quite as I had planned. But I was trying to do singles on a monthly basis. And then when I had 12 singles, I was going to release the album. And so that took a little bit longer than, I want to say almost about 18 months. And then I released all of those on Memoirs. And this next album, this will be my second album release this year, but this is an improvisational album. So I'm actually just sitting at the piano and making up music as I'm sitting there in the moment. And this is the first time I've ever attempted a project like this. And I'm finding that it's a lot more difficult than I anticipated.
I would imagine. I mean, you know, we have minds that want to perfect everything. How do you know when it's good enough to say, okay, that's it? Or do you
into. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I do this Monday morning improv series on Mondays usually that I release on YouTube, and it's first try, first take, mistakes and everything, you know, music that I create in the moment, and I put that out on this YouTube series. And so that's sort of what started this improvisational idea for me. But I'm finding that as I sit at this piano and I'm trying to compose in the moment, what I'm finding is that I'm in this world of self-doubt and worrying that it's not album worthy. It's not good enough to be on an album. And I'm finding that I'm really self-critical in this experience.
Okay. In this domain, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being, I got this, and 10 being, oh my gosh, I'm pulling my hair out. Where is your inner critic on a scale of 1 to 10?
Well, it's interesting because my inner critic keeps telling me, like, you know, you can do this and you're going to release something that is going to be great. But then at the same time, it's like, nope, this isn't good enough. This isn't album worthy. This is, you know, it needs to be better. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of a 50-50. It's like, imagine, you know, I've got the little white angel on one shoulder and the little red devil on the other shoulder pushing and pulling at the same time.
Oh, I totally get that. I could understand that. Now, while we're on this subject, Michelle, you've been very successful as a pianist and a musician, and not a radiologist, by the way. but with all this success, do you ever have fears or self-doubts?
Yes. I think that's the natural state of being a human being. But in this process, I think the biggest things that I worry about are, you know, like I'll release an album and I'll hear from everybody that this is my best album yet. And then I worry, like, well, what if this is it? What if that's the last best album I'm going to ever release? Or, you know, and then I also worry, like, what if the music industry changes so much that, you know, streaming goes away and my ability to reach fans and get the music out there diminishes? Or, you know, it's little fears like that. Like, what does the future hold, and where is my place in that future?
I think that's you have a valid question. Like, what if streaming disappears? I don't have the, you know, foresight to know about that, but I know that live performance changed dramatically. I've been in the booking and, you know, in industry for decades. And, you know, I remember a time where there were bands out six nights a week, you know, people were playing, music was live all the time, and pianists were six nights a week. And now it's totally changed. Changed. So,
oh, completely.
Yeah. So I hear you on that. So with this body of work that you have, Michelle, and these are all your songs are like your children, is my guess. Everyone's different in their own way. Mm-hmm. Can you right now specifically tell us what is your current favorite song, and we'll take a listen to it.
Right now, my current favorite song is Northern Lights. It's a song that I wrote about trying to see the Northern Lights. It's something that I've always wanted to see. It's a bucket list item, and we went to Iceland to try and watch the Northern Lights, and it didn't happen. The skies were cloudy, and there was no solar activity. So I wrote the song anyway on what it, you know, my imagination of the Northern Lights would have been had I seen them. And I love the emotion and the intensity behind this piece.
Well, let's take a listen to Northern Lights by Michelle McLaughlin. Thank you. And there we have it, Michelle's interpretation of what the Northern Lights would be. And it was beautiful. Well done, Michelle.
Thank you.
Oh, no. So with the Northern Lights and all of your music, where, oh, where can we find your music? Where's the best information about Michelle McLaughlin?
My website would be the first place that I would recommend you go if you want to know everything about me. That's michellemclaughlin.com, and that's Michelle with one L. All of the streaming sites, Apple Music, Pandora, Spotify, Google Play, Napster, any place that you can go online to stream or listen or purchase music, you'll find me there.
Nice. And which one do you think you're getting the most airplay out of? Can you identify that?
Definitely Pandora. Pandora has been one of the greatest things for my musical career, and I owe so much to them.
And it got you to Iceland, no doubt, too.
Yes, it did.
All right. Cool. So, all right. So with all this success you have, are you, when it comes to performing live, is that something you enjoy, or is it something that's you have to gear yourself up for?
It's something that I really do enjoy. I don't do as much of it now as I used to. I spent many years on the road touring. My very first official full-length tour was in 2012 with Scott D. Davis. And then he and I decided we were going to do a second round of that. And we ended up touring through the whole entire United States over a period of 2 months.
Wow.
And that was in the summer of 2013.
Uh-huh.
And then I've done multiple tours after that with other musical colleagues. And then I want to say starting in 2016, I took a couple of years off.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are at 2019. And I just did my first tour back on the road with Steve Rivera just this last August. We went up to the Pacific Northwest. But I do run a house concert series here in Salt Lake out of my home.
Yes. And tell me about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a 9-foot Fazioli grand piano in my living room.
Wow.
And it's amazing. It's the one of the best pianos I've ever played, and I can fit 50 to 60 people in my living room comfortably.
Nice.
And so I run this series, and I typically have anywhere from 6 to 8 concerts a year. And I invite people into my home, and we put out snacks and drinks, and it's become an experience that people really love to come, you know, share an evening with us. And it's a lot of fun.
I'm so glad to hear that. And as you know, we at the River of Calm, we do, or you might not know, we do live streaming concerts. We've done 15 so far.
Yeah.
David Nevue is going to be performing here in Nashville with us. And November, we have a pianist named Dane Bryant. He is Olivia Newton-John's musical director. So it's really cool. We have the same thing, but, you know, and it is such an experience with your concerts that your audience has the furthest seat back is closer than they would ever be in an auditorium to an artist.
Oh, yeah.
It's up close and personal. Mm. And then I do have one question, though. We don't have this, but you have this physical requirement of climbing up 40 stairs to the house.
Yes.
What's up with that?
Well, I live in this house up on the hillside in Salt Lake City. My home is up on the mountainside, and it overlooks the whole valley. And so we're on the east side of the street, which means long driveway and a lot of stairs. So I have to put that in my concert ticket links to let people know, because we've had people show up before that it was too much for them to get inside. And
I can imagine. And I can imagine the insurance waiver, sign this before you climb the stairs.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, good for you for putting on these concerts. I'll be happy to share a link so people can know more about them too.
Well, thank you.
So with all the music, your concerts, your cassette tapes, if you can think of all of that big scope of things, what musically, Michelle, do you think you're the most proud of?
Every album that comes, every new project is, you know, my current baby and the thing that I'm the most proud of. You know, of course, there's songs and experiences on each album that really, you know, mean a lot to me and are a part of my, you know, like the inner part of my being. But every new project is usually the most, you know, the thing I'm most proud of, because that's the one thing I'm most connected to at the moment.
Understandable. Yeah. Well, I mean, you've got a lot to be proud of. 19 of them, to be honest with you, are coming up on 20. My gosh. Again, you win as far as release, you know, ability here of all the artists I've worked with and we've worked with on the River of Calm. So What's one thing? Now, everyone knows Michelle as this prolific pianist and concert giver and all that stuff. But what's one thing that most people don't know about you?
Well, I mean, music is part of my, you know, the biggest part of my life. But hobby wise, I'm really into photography. I really love art. I make jewelry, and I would love to be a painter. Just little side projects here and there. Secretly, I write a lot of singer-songwriter music on the piano and the guitar, but I'm terrified to sing in front of people, so I never share that with anyone. Maybe someday. That's a goal for the future.
Weren't you terrified about playing the piano for anyone?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I used to shake. Like, my body would convulse when I had to perform in front of people, and that's gone away. So, you know, just small baby steps. I think my biggest fear there is I don't ever want to release a song where I sing or do something different and then have people tell me, you know, oh, you should just stick with piano. I think that would be the worst.
Well, you're on a winning track right now. I get that. And being an artist, and artists are sensitive, you don't want the rejection, you know, the hurt and all that. I hear you on that. Well, your secret's safe here for now.
Well, thank you.
So if you, I guess this ties into the question of, if you had one musical wish, what would it be?
Well, I think that little things that happen here and there are, you know, that kind of help build you up and inspire you and make you feel like you've accomplished something great. You know, if I could have more of those. So, you know, of course, you know, getting a Grammy nomination would be really awesome. I did get the opportunity to be featured in Rolling Stone magazine, which I think, you know, was probably even better than if I were to ever get a Grammy nomination. So that was pretty awesome.
Get out of here. Are you serious? Rolling Stone?
Yeah, wow. They featured me, put me in their print magazine on the same page as Clint Eastwood, which was pretty awesome as well.
Oh, you're just showing off now. Oh my God, that is great. Wow. Well, that's something to be proud of too. My gosh. And then would this musical wish be for you to be in that smoky club somewhere singing one of your songs? Fearlessly.
No, because I think that that's too much of a scary thought for me right now. So, you know, more than anything, when people ask me, like, you know, where do you see yourself in 5 years or 10 years or whatever? And I don't really look at life in that way. It's more about what's happening now and what am I going to accomplish in the next, you know, 6 to 12 months. And if I can just continue to release music that impacts people and touches them in some way and brings an element of joy to their life in some, you know, in some manner, that to me is just, that's the icing on the cake. That's what I want to keep doing.
And that's why we like you here at the River of Calm, because truly music does touch people so profoundly and in so many ways. I say it's healing, maybe emotionally, spiritually. It's comforting, to say the least, and you have such beautiful music. So you just keep that going, and also make sure you display the Rolling Stone article with Clint Eastwood too. That's pretty good. That's frameable stuff. Yeah.
We actually went around the city and bought all of the magazines so that we could cut them up and frame them.
Oh, heck yeah. I would. That is double total cool on that. Yeah. You are just a woman of many surprises here, Michelle. So I have one last question, and that comes from the 4-hour work week. He always asks if we could put up a billboard to spread your message across the country, what would that billboard say?
I would be a message to everybody that's out there, who is afraid to follow their dreams or afraid to try something new. Don't be afraid. Put yourself out there. You never know what is going to happen in your life. You never know what direction your life will go based on the decisions that you make. And if you have something to share with the world, do it. Put it out there. Don't be afraid of what may happen. Don't be afraid of what people will say. You know, just be brave.
Okay, so we have limited space on the billboard. So if we can't get all those words in, could it be, don't be afraid, follow your dreams?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's profound enough for me. That is wonderful. Michelle, you have been great to talk with. I tell you what. So thank you so much for being on our show with us, the River of Calm podcast. And there you have it. It's a behind-the-scenes look at pianist and composer and Rolling Stone article, Michelle McLaughlin, on the River of Calms Beyond the Music podcast. I'm your host, Ed Basil, and the River of Calm is music to soothe your soul. May the calm be with you.